Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens.
Radio Labyrinth presents Interviews. Our guests this week are Che and Mike Butler, who recently appeared on the History Channel reality show called Secret Restoration, and they did a really cool thing. And Mike, you did this for Che, and it's really, really awesome. The name of the episode is So Gripping, S-E-W, a little pun there, and it's episode 8, and you can watch it on the History app or anywhere you can get History on Demand. Guys, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, guys.
Glad to be here.
Behind you, if you're listening, you're not going to hear this, but if you're watching it on YouTube, you can see behind Che, there is a fully restored telephone booth. And the cool thing about that telephone booth is it has something unique and interesting in it. So we need to get the story about the telephone booth and what's inside of it.
Yes, and I can demonstrate here shortly. I have a history, and my dad and I both have a history background in radio, and that was childhood passion of mine. And I grew up, did it for a while, and left the industry. It's always, yeah. Well, you know, and that was 20 years ago. I mean, I'm still a passion, and you know, thought about doing maybe some voice work, whatever. I've got a little bit of a studio here at the house, and so I came across, you know, this and thought, I'm going to build this phone booth and build it into a voice booth. And I just thought it'd be a cool gimmicky thing. And then I got it and it went nowhere. And so it was an idea that I wanted to do, just if nothing else, for, you know, the nerd factor. And right. It's that. And then this show happened and here we are. And now I've got it and it's really cool.
Now, it was a surprise, right, Mike? You surprised Che with it?
Yeah, there were a lot of elements of surprise involved. And actually, one of the things that I think was surprising was just that we didn't really know what to expect when they got through with it. I mean, right. You saw the video, so you know I kept telling them. And it was actually kind of funny because they ask you a million questions from five or six different people, and then they piece all that together and edit it, you know.
Right.
And they must ask me the same question at least a dozen times. One of the things I kept saying over and over, and then I thought afterwards, well, I hope they cut those extra ones out. I kept saying, I really want you to trick this out. I want to trick this out for Che. And I must have said that 10 times, but fortunately, they only used one of them. So that worked out pretty well.
But at least you didn't say pimp.
Right.
Then it would bounce at the back. You had a career in radio. Where did you work?
We both started at the same station, interestingly enough. We both went to school at Henderson State University in Arkadelphia, Arkansas, and they had a radio station called KWSH, which stood for School with a Heart.
Oh.
Yeah, I worked there when I was in school there, and then later when he was in school, he also worked at the same station. So we both kind of cut our teeth, if you will, at that station. And I went on to work at... my next station was KTPA in Prescott, Arkansas, a booming 500 watts echoing all over the city because it wouldn't go any further than that. And that stood for Come to Prescott, Arkansas. It was interesting to me as I grew up in radio to find that most call signs actually have a meaning.
Was this the kind of radio station where, like, where Papio Danho would come in to talk to his constituents, like that type of thing?
Actually, and you're referring to one of my favorite movies. Actually, we tried to please everybody. We had, we started out with country music when we had signed on. And we signed on at daylight, and we signed off at sunset. And we'd start out with country music till about, 9 o'clock, and then they would play easy listening music for an hour or two. And then when it came to noon, they would have the gospel hour. And then in the afternoon was the road show. And that's where I came in because I was supposed to be playing the music for the kids, you know. And then we kind of kept that going until sign off. So we were trying to please everybody.
What's an example of some songs that you would have played on the road show?
Oh, gracious. Let's see, Fire and Rain. It was not hard rock, obviously, but just what was popular in the day. And that was, let's see, when was that? I was in school in the early 70s, so it was 70s music.
Hell, that was good music.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was awesome.
I worked at a station like that in Elmira, New York, called WIQT, and it was one of my first pro jobs. And everything was on reel to reel, and you controlled it from the board. So all the songs were reel to reel with cue tones on them. And it was the same thing. Like in the morning through the day, it was easy listening. Mm-hmm. We weren't allowed to play I Think We're Alone Now because the owners thought that was too dirty. Tommy, too dirty.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. They really did.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then around 6 o'clock, we would do, there was a bunch of nuns from Buffalo who would record. Mm-hmm. The Hail Mary half hour, and I always forgot to record it, so I just played the backup. No one ever knew, and just been saying the Hail Marys over and over again. And then after that, it was Winston Cup today and the NASCAR show, and then boom, it was such a weird time for radio.
You reminded me of that. There was one song that came out during that time period. You've probably heard it. It's by the The name of the song was "What Do You Say to a Naked Lady?"
Oh yeah.
It was real peppy little. It was a neat song, and it was actually written, as I recall, to go with the candid camera movie they did. And one of the gimmicks in the movie was that they had a naked lady on a elevator, so the doors would open and there'd be this naked woman there, and that was part of their gimmick.
Yeah,
that's our friend Ira's dad.
Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, when the elevator opens, he used to be on the show, his dad.
That's cool. But anyway, I was playing that song, and as I said, you know, we had this gospel hour every day, so we had a wide range of people that listened to the radio, and I actually had one sweet lady call me and ask me if it was really necessary to use the word naked on the air. She was very offended by that.
Filthy, filthy word.
Yeah.
That's Arkansas for you.
Yeah, when you were doing radio, I'm sure you encountered that a lot as well.
I was on a top 40 station. So
the stations were much more progressive.
Yes.
Yeah. I was on KLAZ KXOW. That was the FM, AM, respectively, which was also, we have a fellow alum whose name you might recognize, named Bobby Bones, who also went to, was on KSWH in our college station. And then he went to KLAZ afterwards, after I left. But, you know, I was 4 1/4 an hour, you know, producing commercials, call in AM shows. I had to do the board op on the Cardinals game.
That was fun, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, what the best part about that's the open mic to the booth during the commercials, where I could hear the further it went on, you get to 6th, 7th inning, they're sauce. And then you get to listen to them. And that was always hilarious, unless you left the mic open. Or the line open. Mm-hmm. But I did the Rick D's countdown. That was the worst. I had to be at work at 6 a.m. and it came in on CD, and a little later I'm just pushing buttons for 4 hours while they play the rig deal. I mean, like I was saying even back then, why can't this be automated? Which,
right.
You know.
Yeah. We had a show called Casey's. We did the Casey Kasem countdown on another station I worked for. And they had a feature that you had to run if you ran the countdown. And it was called Casey's Biggest Hits.
Yeah, be sure you separate those words.
And when you were reading the liner for it, coming up next on WNBT, Casey's Biggest Hits. Know how it sounds.
Carefully. I went to KWXI Stereo 97 in Fort Worth when I was in school down there. And we were, at that time, we were still spinning platters. And there are a lot of stories about that. We don't have time for all of them. But one of them was that they started phasing out the jogs with all full automation. And they had this whole wall of tape machines and mostly cartridges. They went from, you know, all the songs were on carts, and they had, like you said, tone stops and starts, and they, you know, had everything. Well, the machine wasn't fully there yet, and so they had to have me sit on the console, and then as the machine started kicking off multiple items at the same time, like, say, three advertisements and two songs, and I had to pot it down and spin up a record until everything stopped. It stopped, and then I could fade out the record and restart and get it going again. So that was a fun experience. That was my last stint there because they did finally phase me out.
Well, by the time I came along in the mid-90s, at least we had the fast forward button on the cart.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We did have a news guy there named David Day, and he told me a story one time about how there was a guy that used to read news. This was the mother station of the Texas State Network. So they would come into the studio, and I would get up, get out of my chair, and the news guy would sit down to read news. And they do their stories, and then they'd turn the mic off and spin the record I left queued up, and then I would take the position back over. But at one point, there was a guy working there. Wasn't me. I want to make sure that you understand that. But there was a guy working there that was following the newsman, and he was sitting back down and restarting, and he couldn't hear anything. Well, what had happened was the news guy had switched all the way to the cue side of the switch, so the speakers were off, so he couldn't hear, but the mic was on cue, so he wouldn't program, you know, wasn't going out over the air, and the guy slapped the switch and said, "I'll bet that blankety-blank newsman left that on," and of course, he had slapped it all the way to program, so when he said on out over the air... And I don't think he worked there much longer.
I can't believe in all my years in radio, I've never swore on the air. No. I accidentally played a remote, you know, back in the old days when someone was doing a remote, you either did a live or you recorded it to tape. Mm-hmm. And I recorded this was from a fair, you know, the Whitneyville Tioga County Fair in northern Pennsylvania. And the lady jock that was out there recorded her break. And I picked up the phone. I said, "How was it?" She said, "It was good." Said, "Okay." And I queued it up and started it, and she messed up and she went, OGDSF dot dot. And I'm like, "Well, you didn't tell me about that." "Oh, I'm sorry."
Minor detail.
I'm dying to know, Che, have you recorded anything in this booth yet?
No, I've done some playing around in there. I've had phone calls and chats with people and stuff like this. And it's really cramped. If you remember phone booths, they were very cramped.
Yeah, where do you even get a phone booth?
So we were buying this property a year and a half ago or so, and we were in the process of all the closing, all the, you know, several weeks long of all of that headache. And one day we decided we were up this way. We said, "Let's go into this antique mall here in town." And we went into this antique mall, and we looked around, and, you know, they're massive. It's old Toys R Us, whatever. Service merchandise, I think, that have been combined, massive space. And I see this booth, and I thought, "Man, that's neat." You know, and when they said on the show $650 original value, that's what I paid for it. I mean, I didn't then. I saw it. Oh, that's neat. And of course, my wife taught me off the ledge. And we left. And then I forgot about it. We finished buying the house. This is a separate, what was in the TV show behind the booth where we were revealing it all. It's a mother-in-law space. It's about a 700 square foot, single bedroom, one bath house that is across from the main house. And so I've made this I work from home. So my office and my studio, it's my little man cave sort of. And I started setting this place up and I saw that corner right there. And I was like, man, it just looks like it's ready for a phone booth. Like I could just picture it there. And I started thinking about this booth. I was like, I'm not going to go back up there and get, it had shelves in it originally. Somebody made it to a curio or something. And I thought, let me just get one that's ready to go, you know, that I can throw a mic in or whatever. And I pull up my phone and I start looking on all the, you know, usual sources. And they're, you know, $4,000 is like the cheapest I could find. I was finding them anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000, $7,000.
Wow.
And after a couple of hours, yeah, a couple of hours of going through and not some of them in not much better shape than this one was, I said, you know what? I better go buy that thing before they realize what they've got. And that day I called a buddy of mine. I said, can you meet me up here? I need help. And he said, sure. One of those, you know, you don't have to explain why. Bring a shovel.
Fine.
Right. And he shows up there. I got there a little bit before him and went in. And I said, oh man, the phone booth, it's gone. Y'all sold the phone booth. So sad. I was really wanting to buy that. And the lady said, oh no, we hadn't had any interest in it. So we moved it to the back. It was in the storeroom. And I said, I got it right now. Where do you want me to pay? He would ask any questions. And then $650 later, we were loading it up in my truck. Out back and hauled it home, and I started taking it apart and got overwhelmed. The veneer was falling apart. I didn't even know where to start. I was in over my head, and I let it sit here. And so that's how we got the booth, and that's how I came up with the idea.
And how did you end up getting on the show with it?
That's a long story. I don't know if I can get into, but there are definitely.
Was there like a casting call for people looking for restoration projects?
If you look out on the internet in these, like in Facebook groups where people talk about restoration, right, of things, I can say that producers of shows like this watch those groups. Also there is an official application form on their website, the production company Spoke Media. I don't think it's on their site. I think it's on History. If you go to the History page, I believe you can get to it that way.
Right.
That would be the official method to go apply. But they do have producers and scouts that are out looking for projects.
Well, I'm figuring because, I mean, this place is in, what, Connecticut?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you guys aren't paying to have this thing taken to Connecticut to have them do this. Yeah.
No. They took care of everything. They sent a box truck here and movers and loaded it up, and it disappeared, and it was out of sight, out of mind for me for several months. And outside of scheduling, you know, when can we get a film crew out, that sort of thing, there was really no discussion. So I was blind to all of that. My dad flew out for that opening scene in Connecticut, and he can tell you about whatever happened there. And then back in the summertime, we put it together. They flew him up. He's in Florida and I'm up here outside of Atlanta, and they flew him up, and we got to have a visit on their dime, which was nice because we don't see each other very often. Nice weekend.
I should send them a picture of the airport when I was returning home. Returning home? Yeah, I was in Atlanta trying to go through the line. This was after COVID had let up enough that the people were actually traveling again. And about one out of 20 people actually wore a mask, which is really great on the airplanes, which would probably explain why I got COVID that trip. But anyway, or help explain it. But I mean, as far as you could see across the airport, the people, I mean, it was amazing. I've never seen that many people. I need to send you the picture.
It was weird, though, because that whole year,
Yep. You didn't see people out like you saw them normally, and people weren't flying and everything. Right. And then you remember, like, oh my God, the traffic was great for the first couple of months. I have to say that was one thing. Everybody just jumped right back into it, and it's like, oh, go back home, work from home. So you get up there, and again, this was a surprise, right?
Right. They get me up there, and I'm walking in. Well, you saw it in the video. They walk me in through the hanging plastic sheets that separate you from outside.
Right.
And we rolled in the phone booth, and Leah's there. And Leah, by the way, is very cool. She is very talented.
Yeah, I like her.
And she's really a personable person. They didn't talk about it on the show, but she's got a terrific website called C. Jane Drill. You can just look it up, C. Jane Drill, and she's got a bunch of YouTube's.
Yeah, YouTube channel.
Right, it's a YouTube channel, and she shows all kinds of, she'll take a tool and show you what the tool is for, how it works. One of the ones I saw, I learned something I didn't know. There's a combination square, and that's the one that's got the sliding ruler in it and an angle and a straight piece, and there's a little thumb screw on the side. And if you pull that out, it's an awl. It's a sharp point. And it's designed to be attached in there so that when you're trying to mark something, you don't have to go hunt for a pencil. It's right there. You just take it out, scratch the wood, and then screw it back in. I didn't know that. I've seen those things for years, and I didn't know that. But anyway, yeah, she met me coming in the door, and that's where you hear in the show, I'm going over here to meet Mike Butler. And I thought, oh, well, there's my intro. and I walked in with my little cute newsboy hat that my son likes, and talked to her about the phone booth. And, of course, all of it looks like it all happened in a nice, even flow, but there are bits and pieces, and, you know, they spliced everything together. But she took me over to the middle. She started messing with the phone booth at one point, and the front almost fell off of it. She's, oh, I can't open the door, because it was all in pieces at that point. And it was pretty rough. There were a lot of things that needed to be fixed. But they took it over, and I told her 20 times that I wanted to really trick it out. And they did. I was really pleased. I thought that...
Jay, before we wrap up, just kind of tell everybody what they'd put inside that thing.
Yeah, give us a tour.
All right. So I've added remote control so that I can turn
it on. Nice.
Oh, neat.
Cool.
that's my little nerd addition. Let me go open the doors. All right. So here's the mic. It's got a Shure 55, super cardioid. I don't know if you can really hear me. I've got it on.
Yeah.
It's got party lights that will respond to your voice, as you can see.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, or you can just go white, and they're plain white. They put a little Yamaha mixing board in here, 12-2 panel, and then, of course, the microphone, the iconic 355 microphone, which looks awesome. And there's an exhaust fan as well.
That is awesome, though. That is an awesome thing.
Yeah, nice. And then, of course, she did the foam. She picked out
that microphone on purpose because it dates to, she pointed out that that's the mic that Elvis used. It dates back to the 50s, and we were guessing his phone booth was probably from the 50s. So she did that on purpose, which I thought was a nice touch.
Like you see Elvis on the cover where he's got the big microphone in his,
right?
That's cool. Well, guys, it must have been a fun experience for you to be on that show and look at the result. What an amazing gift.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and the woodwork is, of course, we can't really see that here in this format, but the woodwork's phenomenal. Like the veneer was flaking off all over, and it looks brand new.
So if you watch Secret Restoration, episode 8.
Yeah.
Yes.
This season, you can see it all in its glory. It's so beautiful.
Yep. Guys, thank you for sharing that with us, and also thanks for sharing the radio talk. I love talking about old radio. I'm an old soul, so I think I got my first radio when I was 4 or 5. My great grandma gave me it was a Snoopy and Charlie Brown, transistor radio. It had that little plug that you could only go in one ear. And I would just listen to talk radio or music all night. I loved that. AM to me still special because you can hear the air, and it used to be when everything was live that you were connecting with somebody, but a lot of that's gone now. And you know, I work at WSB, we still have a lot of live stuff. So, but when I
what was it, WGN? It was in Chicago. I used to listen to all over the country.
Yeah. I used to listen to Boston radio, WBZ, when Jeff and I were living in Pennsylvania. I would listen to the station out of Buffalo. All these, not Clear Channel owned, but
right,
called Clear Channel signals because they could go all over the country at night.
Yeah, at night they skip. They just go all over the place. I used to listen to WGN all the time.
Yeah.
Yep. That honestly is one of the biggest attractions to me, for me, to listening to your show, especially the other show, and back in the basement days where you kind of had inside baseball
right.
stuff going on, and just, it was like connecting to this old life that I had, and hearing all the talk, all the technical talk and the stories and everything. It's that was always the biggest draw for me,
and all the consultants that ruined radio.
right we dug it out before all that.
Yeah, you're lucky. Fortunately, we don't have to deal with that a lot because we don't play music. But anyway, that's another topic, and we could talk about that next time. So,
exactly.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for showing us the phone booth.
Thanks to those guys for coming on. And again, the name of the television show that they're on, where you can still watch it on demand, is Secret Restoration. Inside an old tool factory in New England, restorers and craftsmen repair precious items and family heirlooms and cool gifts from cool dads like Mike Butler. And thanks to Mike and Che Butler for being on and sharing that with us.
It's like the cool, you know, when on Pawn Stars, when they take something and they get it restored.
Yeah.
It's like the whole show is just all these items being restored.
Yeah, and plus you don't have that couple that hate each other now. All right, we'll talk to you again. We have more Radio Labyrinth Presents interviews coming up this year. So stick with us, and we'll talk to you later.
Try again.